Okay, hey, and welcome to the CFO Story. It's our first official podcast with a CFO joining us today, and we are excited to have that today. I'm Jason Lee. I'm one of your hosts. I'm here with my co-host, Sammy Abood.
Hello. Welcome.
Yeah, both vice presidents here at Exponent Advisors, and we are joined today by Rob Johnson, the president and managing partner of Sabre Financial here in Houston.
Thank you, Jason. Sammy, good to see you guys. Thanks for having me today.
Yeah. And we are glad to have you today. And today's topic, we're going to talk really actually what's fantastic about our topic today is that we're talking about two different things, right? The transactional side of and a CFO's kind of role inside of that. Sure. And then also the day-to-day component, which is essential to your business. And I think you're going to give us a little bit of a backdrop, but you guys kind of play a role in doing both of those things, right? So you're on the transaction component for the CFO work, but then also stepping into kind of the day-to-day operation. So why don't you give us some background so people can kind of understand where we're going with the conversation today?
Yeah, sure. No, thanks, guys. Appreciate it. So you know, real quickly, I mean, I'm a CPA by background. I was with Price Waterhouse here in Houston back when they were still just called Price Waterhouse, back in the 90s. I was in an industry corporate roles for about 15 years after that, doing you know, financial reporting, a lot of forecasting, analysis, investment models, all those kind of things. I started this firm in 2015. It was just me for a few years, but there are now eight or nine of us in the group. Everyone has 15, 20, 25, 30 years of experience. And we provide, as you said, Jason, both fractional and transactional and interim CFO and controller services to small businesses and mid-market companies across all sorts of industry and geography throughout the U.S. and Canada. There's really kind of four roles that we cover. Two of them are more fractional or recurring in nature. The other two are more transactional. We have the forward-looking CFO services, planning, analysis, modeling, et cetera, which can be done on a fractional or interim basis. We have the interim and fractional controller service as well, more around financial reporting, mentoring, training, development of staff, maybe within our client companies. And then on the transactional side, we do a lot of M&A advisory, buy side in particular, helping either entrepreneurs to acquire a company or companies to acquire vendors, competitors, whatever it may be. And we'll support them with due diligence, deal structure, valuation, all those kind of things. And then finally, last but not least, also on the transactional side, we do a lot of capital advisory or capital sourcing work as well. It might relate to an acquisition and maybe refinancing of real estate, maybe for growth capital or for any other purpose. And, we kind of lean into our network of lenders and investors to help our clients identify and secure quality capital from reputable groups.
Okay. Fantastic. Thanks, Rob.
Awesome. So given this and given our market today, what we see going on with the interest rates.
Yep.
Talk about, if you will, what's it like qualifying for capital in this current lending environment? What are you seeing, and is this something that's a challenge?
Yeah, I mean, good question. Yeah, it's a different world than it was, a year or two ago for sure. And one thing is that yes, the interest rates are higher, the cost of capital is higher, and so that just quantitatively makes it more difficult for the numbers to work in terms of securing financing. But there's also a lot of uncertainty in the market about the economy and recession or not and where are things going. And so in addition to the interest rate, kind of challenges, there's also just a tougher, to just get yeses from the underwriters and so forth. So yeah, it is different, and it takes some knowledge and some ability to kind of put your best foot forward to be able to present yourself well and be able to tell your story so that the lenders are kind of get on board with your with your vision.
Sure. It's all about being bankable, right?
Yeah.
And do you feel at times your options are kind of squeezed just depending on what's going on, and then you have to be able to flex, right, depending on what the environment is?
Yeah, Sammy, I mean, that's right. And you say bankable, and that's right. I mean, that's everybody's goal. Everybody's goal is to get to the point where they're bankable and they have conventional loan, SBA loan with a, a bank or a non-bank type of lender and, nice cost of capital and, long term to the agreement, et cetera. And that's great. And then we work with our clients, over time to graduate them to that point. And some are ready for that now. and some are not. So, you know, there's a spectrum of lending options where the end goal is to end up with a bank type of lender, but not everyone is ready for that yet. And so there's a whole spectrum of options leading up to that point with alternative lenders, venture debt groups, revenue-based lenders, asset-based lenders, and all sorts of other types of scenarios. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, it's really our job working with our clients, helping them to find the right fit for the situation they're in, for starters. Yeah. And maybe that's not with a bank yet. Maybe that's with one of these, you know, alternative lending groups or private, you know, family office that's doing venture debt, whatever it may be. And then over time, working with them to help them with, you know, to have visibility, to help them to improve their financials, to have better vision over their financials, mm-hmm. so that they can put their best foot forward, you know, 6 months, 12 months, 2 years from now, so they can graduate along that spectrum and secure better and better financing options over time.
Yeah. Awesome. Yeah.
Talk to us about non-starters, right? And so when I think of a non-starter, like, I feel like, first of all, I feel like banks are always down to give money to people who don't need it.
Right.
Right?
Like, right.
So if you've got plenty of money and a ton of capital, they're like, man, I'll give you a loan all day.
Yeah.
But it's that guy who has a dream, has a vision. Maybe they're plugging away. Maybe they just, you know, he's sitting in an office somewhere with this phenomenal business opportunity, but he just can't get over that hurdle. And if he had $1 million, it would be like game on. But he's trying to figure that out. What are the non-starters for the person that's listening to this show that says, hey, if you don't even have this in place, no one's going to talk to you. So you got to get some things. What are the things that somebody needs to kind of start positioning themselves in to even be able to get a conversation, even if it's an alternative lending? What are some, like, make sure you get these things at least in place?
Yeah, that's a good question for sure. And, you know, I think that you know, what are the lenders looking at? Obviously, some of them are really fixated on earnings and earnings history. And have you at least crossed that line to be profitable on a month-to-month basis? And even better, have you been that way for 3 months or 6 months or a couple of years? So at the more mature end of the lending spectrum, there's a lot of focus there. If you have an SBA loan, the collateral is kind of another issue, right? If you're in a heavy equipment type of business, you own a bunch of construction equipment or you own a bunch of vehicles, you own things within the business that have a lot of tangible value, then that can be very helpful. But not necessary. A lot of companies don't have their service companies or their, you know, just low capital, you know, intensive types of businesses. And so, you know, the SBA lending is a really outstanding option, you know, loans up to $5 million for that type of scenario where maybe collateral is a little bit of a challenge. You're probably not going to get a conventional loan without having some collateral coverage. That collateral coverage could be inside the company, could be your own personal collateral if you have investment real estate or, you know, stock holdings or these kind of things that you'd be willing to pledge. But the SBA programs are really, really helpful for being able to kind of take care of that collateral gap type of issue. And the SBA program, without going into too many details, provides lenders with a lot of ability to not ignore collateral entirely, but to work with it and to accept a little bit of a gap there. So so that can be a nice option. Kind of back to the core of your question, Jason, what are non-starters? Well, I mean, you have to have a reasonable level of personal credit. That matters. Yeah. You don't have to have an 850, right? You don't have to have the 750. But, you know, if your you know, credit score is in the low 600s or it's in the 500s, it's going to be challenging. It's not to say it's impossible, but your cost of capital is going to be tough to identify, tough to secure, and it's going to be expensive when you get it. So I always coach our clients to keep a really, you know, a really tight eye on their own personal credit, because yes, there's some lenders will look at the credit of the company, but for smaller companies, that doesn't really seem to be nearly as important or nearly as much a point of focus as your personal credit. So, you know,
well, if it's a small company, they haven't had a lot of credit.
Exactly. Right. Exactly. Yeah. Right. So. Exactly. So I'd say, you know, the one that's kind of, that kind of is the deal killer, I would say, is really poor credit. Almost anything else, you can kind of work with it. Even a startup, you know, startup organization, if you have a little bit of, A little bit of maybe personal, personal assets. If you have some supplemental income, that's nice. Maybe if a spouse has a job and you're starting a company, that can be very helpful. Almost anything else you can kind of work with. But the personal credit matters a lot. And a lot of small business owners, want the company to kind of carry the day. Maybe the company's been around for a few years and it's making a little bit of money. Mm-hmm. And, there's this thought of, I don't really need to rely on my own personal credit. I don't need to do a personal guarantee because the company is profitable now.
Sure.
And that's not the truth. And that's really not the reality in this small company and mid-market, space. Until you're up to maybe 100, 200 million plus company, The focus is on the owner. It's on the ownership team, And that personal collateral and those personal resources matter a lot.
Sure, I can attest to that in previous experience work. Myself as a CFO, we were kind of in that mid-market range, 100 million, 150 million, and we thought the financials spoke for themselves,
right?
And it did part of the way.
Yeah.
So certainly the owner's personal credit and personal guarantee was part of the conversation. So that's a good conversation.
Absolutely. Yep.
Valuable.
Just to wrap that up, the personal guarantees, do matter. And it is, again, possible to secure, small business financing without a personal guarantee. If you've got some strong assets there in the background. But even then, the personal guarantees are really important. And, we've had a number of cases where a client has said, hey, I want to do this, but I don't want a personal guarantee. Mm-hmm. And it's not impossible, but it is not easy. It's not easy for a smaller company to secure financing without some strong assets or a personal guarantee behind it.
And for those people that are, so they come to you, and I guess more often than not, let's say they've got good credit, they're right. They've got a great business model. And then they're coming to you. Someone says, well, I'm going to introduce them to Rob, and maybe Rob can help them get some capital. Typically, when you come in and you look under the hood, what are the things that they're typically missing that you guys can kind of step in and clean up or support them in that then helps them show well? Because a lot of these guys that are this, they're not professionals that go into banks to get money. They're professional concrete guys that being tasked with this job. So how do you take a concrete guy and then turn him into a banker? You can't. So you just got to figure out a way to bridge the gap. What do you come in and say, okay, here's what I look at, and then here's what we typically move from, bad to good or good to great to help them go get that money?
Yeah, and that's a great comment. And, and to some extent, that's kind of our role so that the concrete, services guy doesn't have to, be a financial services person. At the same time, we do a lot of teaching, and there's a lot of training, and there's a lot of we really look to help our clients to learn and grow and be part of the process. Some of our clients are pretty sophisticated, and they really have been around the block a number of times in terms of securing sophisticated types of financing or conventional financing, whatever it may be. And others are really not familiar with the process at all. So, we get an assessment of their situation, if their financials are not, presented particularly well, which they are not always presented well or timely or clearly or whatever. It will take a little bit of time really before we go out to the lending community to make sure that their financials are presentable. We'll work with them to put together a forecast, because in a lot of cases, that's not really part of their normal routine. We'll help them to put together a 2 to 3 year forecast, so that they can present themselves and show their vision, in terms of profitability to the prospective lenders or investors. And then a lot of it is about just presenting well. It's not about saying things that aren't true, but it's about, hey, this is who we are. This is where we're going. And, putting a best foot forward and being able to answer questions that come back from the bankers or the lenders, with clarity and with some confidence. And the small business owner may be nervous or uncertain or, well, what do they really mean by that? And we can provide a lot of support and just kind of knowing how to answer the questions and being a strong representative for them to be able to present well and hopefully allow them to put their best foot forward.
Sure. Yep. So let's talk about for a minute presenting well. P- part of that.
Yep.
One way to look at it is, what have you done? And what speaks to that is their financials, right? Clients' yes. financials. In your experience, would you say that audited set of financials are non-starters for lenders, or not necessarily?
No, not at all. No. Not particularly important in most cases. I mean, it's nice if there's already an audit's been done for some reason, then
certainly then helpful.
It's
right?
great. That's a bonus, but it's not at all necessary. And we do. You know, we secure financing for our clients all the time mm-hmm. without having audited financials or even reviewed or compiled
yeah.
financials. So, you know, in many cases, you know, in most of the cases, I would say, you know, it's their management prepared financials. There's obviously the management team, the ownership team are making representations and
Correct.
Probably having personal guarantees that are kind of behind them. But no, not particularly important that there be audited numbers, just that they be clear
Sure.
and that they be consistent and that they not, you know, that there be comparability from one year to the next mm-hmm. without, you know, all sorts of changes and classifications and just clarity goes a long way.
Cool.
If that makes, yeah,
yeah,
that
absolutely.
Makes sense.
Mm-hmm. And showing yeah. a defendable story.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, absolutely. Right. Yeah. Agreed.
So back of a napkin, not a good idea.
What is that?
The back of a napkin.
No, back. Yeah, not a great idea.
Not a great
that's
idea.
That's not
going to fly.
That's not the best process for your financial reporter. Although it's better than a few. It's better than a few that I've seen.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure you've probably seen all sorts.
So
right?
That's part. That's part of the fun really of what we do is we work with all sorts of different types of groups and all sorts of all stages of maturity, and some are really kind of on the cusp, ready for prime time, and they just need that boost to kind of get them over the hump and get there. And others are much earlier stage, much less sophisticated, and there's a lot of opportunity for us to teach and train and grow and develop the people and the processes and the organization.
So, fantastic.
Yeah.
Well, I think now would be a great time to transition because, and again, we talked that you wear two hats or
sure.
a couple different hats
sure.
inside the organization. Again, I think we've talked a lot about the transactional side and maybe even preparing for a transaction and or the work that goes into getting capital, securing capital. Maybe now we can pivot to more of really kind of the day-to-day, right? And so we were talking before the show and you said that one of the things that you see a lot with business owners is just the stuff that they don't even know that's hurting their profitability, some
sure.
of the gaps. And so maybe we can talk and pivot there a little bit. Tell us a little bit about some of your kind of aha moments or findings when you step into a business and realize that they have things that are hindering their profitability.
Yeah, absolutely. So I think there's two kind of really common kind of comments that we get from a lot of our clients. One is, I'm making money on paper. Why do I never have any cash? And so we do a lot of work with our clients kind of attacking that issue. And then the other issue is the one that you just described. You know, and sometimes they don't even know, like a lot of times the business owners don't know what they don't know in this respect, which is, you know, I am profitable or I'm break even or whatever. And, you know, I'm looking at my financials every month or every quarter and I know what those numbers are, but I don't really understand why we're profitable. I really don't understand which of the component parts of my business are really driving profitability or holding us back. And I don't really understand, you know, which product lines or which service lines or which locations or which, which parts of the business are actually driving profitability. Kind of a good example, and I share this story with a lot of people because I think it really illustrates the issue is, you know, many years ago, probably 5-6 years ago, we had a client that was a trucking client, and they did hazardous material transport kind of in the Southeast, and profitable company and, you know, decent sized company, and company had been around for 30 years or so. They had, you know, 6 to 8 key clients, and their one client in particular was kind of their big client. It was, you know, 30-50% of their revenue. And so they were always bending over backwards every year. The contract would come up to be renewed. They were, you know, they'd concede on contractual terms. They had all their people and resources that were trying to make this one client happy. And we spent a little time with them, kind of drilling into that kind of that profitability kind of by, you know, by component within the company, and looked at it by customer. And what we found after a few weeks or a month or so kind of digging in with them was that they were profitable despite that big client, not because of the big client. Mm-hmm. And they were kind of on, they were kind of break even. They were on the hamster wheel with that big client, and it was their other six or seven clients, their smaller clients, that were really making the money and really mm-hmm. driving profitability. Mm-hmm. So that was really kind of an eye opener for the owner and for his, you know, his sales team and everybody, ops team and everybody. And it had a real impact on the company in terms of how they approached the negotiations that next year with that mm-hmm. big client. They dug their heels in on some terms that, so that they left themselves some better, you know, some better margin. And they also started paying a lot more attention to those other clients. They put more people and more resources mm-hmm. and on those other clients to drive additional, you know, volume and, you know, and with those other clients, since those are the ones who really were their, the clients that were kind of being good to them and driving value.
Yeah,
so interesting. Really interesting.
So yeah. That's a case of them needing to recognize, probably with your help, getting granular is sometimes extremely impactful, mm-hmm. right? Because sometimes the profitability of a particular client or service line or product line may be buried, and until you get granular and understand, utilizing whatever systems are available, just extremely valuable information. Then you focus on your strengths, right?
Absolutely, and it is. It's like not. It's not easy a lot of times. I mean, mm-hmm. you don't go in most cases, you know. The companies maybe they're splitting out their, you know, their revenues by product or these kind of things. A lot of times they're not. Maybe mm-hmm. they have their, you know, their accounts maybe give some indication of their different product lines or mm-hmm. service lines. Maybe it doesn't. And so it does take some work, you know, to dig into it a little bit and figure out what are the sources of revenue, and then also what are the direct costs. You know, costs, materials, labor, whatever it might be, that really are directly associated with each of those, you know, those items. You know, we might interview, you know, some of the ops team or sales team or others to say, you know, where are you spending your time and your effort to get a sense of those things. What we don't do, and what I don't really particularly like or recommend, you know, you have certain overhead costs in the company, rent and, you know, maybe base pay to folks that aren't maybe necessarily revenue, mm-hmm. part of the revenue center. And, you know, I'm not a big fan of trying to take those types of costs and allocate them to this division or that product or that service. I don't really think you get real far. It's very arbitrary. But you know, if you can focus on the key sources of revenue and you can identify the direct costs and people costs and other costs that relate to it, and get kind of a contribution margin for each of those, you know, kind of revenue centers, then you've gone a long way in terms of being able to really understand and again, kind of graduate from not just what the numbers are, but, you know, what do they mean and you know, what is it that's really, really helping us.
That's valuable. Yeah.
I think one of the bigger learning opportunities I had when I was in multi-unit operations was really because I grew up in sales, so mm-hmm. I understood top line. I think a lot of times that's the number that people are looking at, but then when it comes, then they wonder what's hindering the bottom line.
Yeah.
And then the real like learning opportunity I had was, well, that dollar saved, what does it take to go earn the dollar? Yeah. You know what I'm saying? So it's like, if I just save $1,000 over here, it cost me $5,000 to make $1,000.
Yes.
Right. And so learning how to differentiate of course you can also save your way out of business by not going out and growing the business. Mm-hmm. But I think that's where guys like yourself can come in and add tremendous value, which is what's the balance between being so top line driven that you're just leaking money, bleeding, hemorrhaging money, which a lot of companies do, and or being so focused on the bottom line that you forget that you need money and you need to spend money to grow.
Right? Yeah, so, I think that's a really terrific point. And, you know, and there are, I've been with small organizations working with small clients. I've been with, you know, $1 billion plus organizations that all of them can struggle with that point, that it's not, I mean, revenue matters, obviously, but it is not all about revenue. It is ultimately about profitability. But at the same time, not being, you have to invest. You have to invest in your business to make it bigger and make it better. But companies that focus too much on the top line and not enough about understanding what's going on by the time you get to the bottom, mm-hmm. It's a dangerous way to run your business.
Yeah, little saying we like to say around here, and Jason, I know you're familiar with it. We talk about it's not necessarily what you make, but what you keep.
That's right.
That's the name
of
the game.
Sammy, that's right. Yep, exactly.
Well, Rob, as we get ready to gear up and transition out, we always like to talk a little bit more about move from the business kind of more to the personal side, or get your feedback, because we're hoping that through the show that we're going to reach an audience of a wide variety of individuals, that being those who are seasoned in the industry and the maybe CFOs or those that are coming up in the industry and controllers and people who are looking to maybe step into this role. And so one of the things I'd be curious about is what's led to your professional success. I mean, I've known you for a while now, right, and you're doing a phenomenal job out there. I always get great feedback from you.
Thank you.
Yeah. Both from networking partners and then also clients and prospects and people we meet together. Give me your feedback on the things that, maybe the top three things that have led to your professional success.
Yeah, no, thanks, Jason. I appreciate that. I think first is, integrity and transparency. I think, just being honest with people goes a long way. And, we have transactional roles in some cases. We really are meant to be long-term relational partners. And it starts with trust. It starts with developing some confidence and some rapport with our clients, and gaining and earning their confidence that we're going to be in their corner and that we're going to help them to evaluate things objectively and make good decisions. And so I think that integrity of just really being really a member of their leadership team, over time to help them make quality informed decisions. I think that first of all, I think is a big part of our success to date. I think too, the breadth of knowledge that we have, within our firm and, the eight or nine of us, some are terrific controllers, some are terrific CFOs, some are great with structured finance deals or, due diligence on, business acquisitions. And then some of us have several of those types of, types of backgrounds and interests. So I think our ability to bring a team of people, it might be two, three, four people on a particular engagement, and be able to help with, as you said earlier, Jason, the day-to-day blocking and tackling of just getting your financials in order, and then also looking ahead about what's coming and doing some forecasting, some analysis to really understand what's going on. Having that, and then also being available to support the big events, the transactions, whether it's a financing initiative, whether it's acquiring a competitor or whatever it may be, being able to support them through those transactions, and then when the deal gets done, to then continue back with the day-to-day types of things. I think that's a real advantage for our clients working with us in terms of our ability to really be able to support those various cycles and initiatives as they grow. And then finally, as you said, I think the other point, which I think is been critical to our success, is that we're providing real value to our clients that meets a critical need. And there's clients that we meet that maybe are introduced to us that don't even know that having a fractional CFO or a fractional controller is something that exists. And they're like, well, we can't afford a full-time CFO, and so we're filling needs, and we have a larger company, a mid-market company. They do have a controller or CFO. Position's been vacated. It's going to take a few months for them to find a quality replacement, and they don't know that there's an option to kind of have an interim resource like ours, so we can come in, really keep things moving, train, develop, bring some new ideas and best practices, help them maybe to onboard a new individual and then get out of the way. So, and then those, those transactional or day-to-day types of needs, smaller companies, mid-market companies, they don't always have those resources like larger companies do. And so I do feel good about the fact that we're providing real value and support to these companies that's meeting a critical need.
Excellent. Fantastic. Wow. Awesome.
Got a question for you, Rob.
Of course.
Would you have any words of wisdom that you would like to share for CFOs that are, let's just say, kind of developing their craft or starting out?
Yeah.
You've been doing what you've been doing for a while, very successful, but what words of wisdom would you leave for those who are kind of starting up starting that craft as a CFO or controller in that space?
Yeah, that's a good question, Sammy. I think, and I alluded to it a little bit earlier, I think it's about, you know, if it's maybe a controller that's looking to be a CFO within an organization, or if it's a CFO who's, you know, younger and looking to develop. I think you know, the one thing that really jumps out in my mind is, again, I've used this word a few times in a few different ways, but graduating from what to why, right? You know, knowing, being able to run the numbers and run it and print out the report and do some variance analysis, that's important and that's necessary, and you need to understand those things. But that is really explaining to either the owner or yourself what is going on. Mm-hmm. The extra step and where there's so much additional value, you know, within an organization is when you can start to interpret the what and translate it into the why and the how, and what does it really mean? How are we earning money? You know, what's holding us back? You know, what do we have available to maybe seize an opportunity, whether it's an acquisition or mm-hmm. an investment in equipment? But really taking those numbers and applying them, looking forward and being able to be to help the ownership team to make those decisions and really understand what the numbers mean, I think is probably the single greatest, kind of step forward from someone that's maybe earlier in their career, great with the numbers, but then being able to understand those numbers and articulate them and present them well in a simple way is just huge additional value.
There's a lot of meat there. I mean, you go from the data, which is the what,
right,
to the why, which is now what are we going to do about it? You know, what are we lacking, or what are we doing well, right?
Correct.
And what do we need to focus?
Yep, that's exactly, awesome. Exactly.
Yeah. Good words.
Man, I think you got a lot of good advice on the show today, a lot of good insight.
Thank you, guys.
Excited to have you kick this thing off for us
and
get out there, and hopefully it'll land in someone's hand who needs to hear it, and maybe they'll be inspired by it or, really kind of take it to that next level. And so, and then hopefully, again, for those who maybe want to reach out to you and are seeking advice, why don't you share your contact information so that they
sure.
can reach out to you.
Yeah, no, I appreciate that, guys. And thanks for having me. It's been, mm-hmm. been a lot of fun to kind of talk through things with you. Our company is Sabre Financial Group. It's Sabre Financial Group, kind of the sword. The website is Sabre, Sabre-financial.com.